It's a treat to find out who's coming along, who's doing what, especially among the great younger musicians of our area. We get a specific opportunity to do that every year during Music Fest Northwest, but we need to do things in between times, such as right now. A young man named Rogan Tinsley is with me. He has an alto saxophone in his hand, and he is going to begin with a piece he wrote, which is called Prelude. Prelude by Rogan Tinsley, live right here. Prelude by Rogan Tinsley, live in our studio, played by the composer. And Rogan, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
And specifically, this prelude, is this a freestanding prelude, or is this part of a multi-movement work?
So it's part of a multi-movement work. I have a series of caprices that I'm working on, and for each caprice, there's a prelude. And that was just one of the preludes to a caprice I'm hopefully about to play.
Nice. Okay, so Rogan Tinsley, who is clearly both a fine saxophone player and a composer. Let's take them one at a time, but any time that they intersect comes along too. What was your young musical stuff? Did your parents wisely make you take piano lessons when you were 5 years old?
When I was 5 years old, my parents made me pick up a fiddle and play bluegrass music, so I guess I don't have that background that a lot of other composers have, you know, playing piano since they were very young.
But you have the background that you have.
Yeah, I have my own background, so yeah, I value that quite a lot.
Yeah, and so then where in your musical life did other things come along?
Yeah, so I was in sixth grade, and in band I had to pick up alto saxophone.
Okay, I have to stop you right there. Okay, you walk into school, they show all the instruments, and you surprise your parents by what you walked home with. What made you choose the saxophone?
Well, I saw it, and I was like, that looks kind of cool. I want that. You know, it was just kind of magnetic. I don't know. I guess I thought I would probably look cool holding it.
I like the really deep reasons that we chose our instruments. Yeah. I chose mine because it was weird. Nobody else was doing it. Yeah. And so anyway, the minute you got it in your hands, did it feel like, yeah, I ought to be doing this?
It took a little while. In the sixth grade, I lived in Idaho, so there weren't a lot of musical opportunities for me. And then in seventh grade, I moved to Washington, Spokane, and I really picked up, you know, saxophone. In sixth grade, I was kind of, you know, I had a saxophone, but I didn't really really play saxophone. So it took a couple years before I really got to feel the instrument.
The beauty of the system is that when you hit seventh grade, then I'll bet that you were in a school where suddenly you had band 5 days a week, right?
Yeah, all 5 days.
And that's huge.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that changes it all. What was your middle school?
I went to Sacagawea.
Okay, lovely music program there too, and that doesn't hurt too when that feels really vital. And then my peripheral question relative to that. at the same time that you were enjoying playing the saxophone and enjoying music and playing in band, did it also start creating a tribe for you?
Yeah, I definitely hung out with band kids a lot more. I mean, it's kind of, it's isolated in a good way, in the way that you know, you get to know everyone you're playing with, both musically and personally. So, yeah, it's a great experience just socially.
And when how old were you when you had your first saxophone lesson?
Ooh,
give or take.
I think I must have been 14, okay. Probably 8th grade.
Yeah, okay.
Around there.
And so then you had a teacher and you started having saxophone lessons. Was there any issue between whether you were going to play the music that your teacher told you to play or that you were going to start playing your own music?
A lot of the times I would bring in music to my teacher and he would just be like, okay, we're doing this now. I had other plans, but I guess we're doing this now. So I guess I probably caused some frustration for my teachers, but not a whole lot of, you know, conflict, I guess.
Well, frustration or maybe interesting opportunity for a teacher to also engage a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Cameron LaPlante.
Yeah, that was Cameron LaPlante.
Who's a great guy.
Fantastic.
And a great teacher and all that. So when did the C word come along? When did you start actually thinking of yourself as a composer?
Ooh, I've always loved creating. You know, when I was young, I liked to write. And then I got older and I started to draw. And now I can't draw anymore. And then I started writing music. It was just kind of a natural progression, I guess.
So when you're writing music, would you kind of play it first and write it down, or would you just get out some manuscript paper and start putting notes on the page?
You know, it depends what kind of piece I'm writing. If I want to write like a big band piece, then I guess I'd probably start with my saxophone. But sometimes I'll start on paper because it gives me a little detachment, you know, something I could write down now and play later and see if I like it, edit it, and whatnot.
So you put down the first note, and then you figure out the second note. You just kind of start mentally playing it in your head, you know?
Yeah, sometimes it's not even very much of a, I want this note specifically. It's just I need to put notes down or else I'm never going to start writing, you know? Because a lot of composers, I feel like we spend a lot of our time staring at the wall of a practice room and not doing anything, and then finally get the courage up to write some notes down, and it's like, oh, this finally works, even if the notes aren't, you know, very, very thought through, or, you know.
Sure, yeah. Okay, so you started composing because you've always enjoyed being creative. And now that's really kind of consuming you, isn't it? Talk about recently and getting a composition teacher and going through the process.
Yeah, so I've had a composition teacher for a few years. And before that, it was kind of a, you know, playing jazz was my day job. And then composing was just a kind of thing I did on the side as a hobby. Then I hooked up with my composition teacher right now.
Whose name is?
Jonathan Middleton. Fantastic composition teacher. And I really got to dive deep into like what I wanted out of music and what it could do for me. So I don't know if it was immediately I took to music and immediately it was all enveloping, but it was more over time, and now it's kind of, you know, it's my life, definitely.
And a composition teacher, does he just say bring in something and we'll start dissecting it, or does he send you out with a challenge or a focus, or how do they teach composition?
Well, he spends about half the time talking about music theory, which is, you know, necessary if you want to write music, and then the other half of the time, I usually just bring in stuff that I felt compelled to write. And sometimes he'll give me a prompt. He actually has a book that I work from a lot that has challenges like that quite a lot. So, he definitely does give me some challenges. But I think a lot of the time I work better just kind of on my own, free to roam.
Yeah. Spending time with Rogan Tinsley, who's a composer who has a saxophone in his hand. So I think, well, let's hear, we had that nice prelude, now let's stretch out a little bit, because you have a fairly major piece, this Caprice for unaccompanied saxophone. I think we're going to hear it, and then we'll have a fine time talking about it. Thank you. In our studio, that was Rogan Tinsley, who was playing his piece, Caprice. And Rogan, you say you've actually played, you're working on a series of Caprices, are you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I guess kind of modeled after Paganini's Caprices, kind of a challenge to other saxophonists to say, can you play this? And I guess sometimes I can't play it myself, but, you know, getting there.
Well, sure. No, that you have the... That you're pushing the instrument and the instrumentalist at the same time. Okay, so let's kind of talk about a few things about this Caprice. You've in one way used the fact that Paganini called them Caprices. Was there anything else about calling it a Caprice that that focused your writing of it?
Yeah, so Caprice implies that it's a kind of a rapidly shifting moods and feelings. And you can definitely hear that in Paganini's Caprices. I mean, if you know, everyone's heard the 24th Caprice, how it kind of shifts from different, you know, technique to technique, but also tempo to tempo. And I tried to emulate that with kind of texture to texture with this piece. So maybe not as tonal, maybe not as rigidly structured, but, you know, a bit shifting moods and colors, definitely.
Yeah. And music comes from within. It comes from what you decide the next note should be, or whatever next note comes out. But it also comes from a life of experience. Were you thinking of any other musical styles or composers or periods or writing for the saxophone or anything like that consciously in doing this?
I was definitely consciously thinking of Debussy.
Funny you should say that, because I wrote Debussy down on this piece of paper I heard it. Talk about that a little bit.
So when I wrote this actually a while back. And back then I was very into Debussy, because that was kind of the beginning of the rabbit hole of 21st century or 20th century music, sorry. Because, you know, it's not necessarily like Beethoven or Mozart or Tchaikovsky in the way that it doesn't try to emote sadness or happiness or joy. It tries to elicit, you know, connection with nature. And that was what was very attractive about Debussy's works for me. I guess that was kind of a you know, beginning of a rabbit hole for 20th century music. But at the same time, it's also so easy to listen to. You know, who doesn't love Debussy?
Well, and also kind of nice that he kind of came along when the saxophone was really coming along, too, and reaching a real respectability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he his last piece was actually a piece for saxophone. And a lot of saxophonists like to joke that the saxophone killed him, because it was his last piece and he never finished it. And did the same to Glazunov when he wrote his concerto. So.
Yeah, I've made the same joke that he was intending to write a piece for oboe and horn being my instrument, and then he died before it. So he was scared, he couldn't take us on. So we all make our bad composer jokes. Anyway, Rogan Tinsley, my guest here. Now, within each of your elements that you'd come to, and you talked about those lovely group of different elements in a caprice, talk about developing an element and kind of how much you change it, how far you go, how many times you repeat, and maybe you'd even have an example of how you develop just one idea within there.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that you can develop a theme, and a lot of different ways that I tried to develop some themes in here. You know, the first way I used was harmonically. I took seventh chords, major seventh chords, and I kind of transpose them chromatically in certain places. And then I would, also with range, I would try and hit some low B flat, which is the lowest note on the saxophone's range. And that's kind of an intense sound, you know. So I use that to build tension, to build, you know, forward motion. And then at times I would also use more intense rhythm. So I use 16th notes, and I kind of freed it up at times and tried to rein it in at certain times. So yeah, there's a lot of different factors that a composer can try to use.
Without needing to cover all those at once, just pick a section, just where you have two or three or four phrases that develop, so that we just kind of hear the idea of that.
Yeah, so the opening theme of this piece, I develop in four different ways, I guess you could say, and I can play them right here.
Please. Nice. That was a great example of those things that you showed. When you're figuring out how to go with the development, are you in developing something? Are you kind of putting yourself in the listener's position of, how many times should I do this before they're going to expect it? How many times can I surprise them? Talk about kind of patterns versus surprise.
Yeah, so I kind of think through the medium of shapes, kind of like abstract art. You know, maybe you would start out with a triangle and you would change it a little bit as you went along. So maybe the first theme would be a, you know, an upward line. And then I would think, you know, what would be the best other upward line that would complement the first upward line, and try and morph these shapes into something that's that contrasts from the beginning and contrasts from the other parts of the piece. But I guess I you know, as a composer, you kind of have to put yourself in the listener's seat every once in a while. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can think about how to develop a piece.
And in terms of the whole piece, did you in any way map it out or have a sense of where you were going to go, or did you just start in and see what path you were going to go down?
You know, for a lot of pieces, I try and map it out. I know John Cage really, you know, he couldn't write if he didn't have it mapped out. And that's me for a lot of pieces, especially for like larger ensemble pieces. But when you know, the only instrument that's playing the piece is an alto sax, is kind of freeing in a way. So when I'm writing for alto sax, I don't usually map out the piece beforehand. Maybe for a larger ensemble piece, but when I'm writing for alto saxophone, I kind of try to keep like a free storytelling kind of.
So it makes good on the title Caprice. It's capricious.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Rogan Tinsley and his composition, his playing, all these things. We're going to have you back for some other sessions with different aspects of your composition in the future. But what a great first taste of you and your compositional process, your playing. Talk a little bit about the rest of your musical life. You and your dad occasionally play a little background. You were talking earlier about jazz as your day job. You and your dad, he plays, he's a writer for the paper, and he plays the guitar. You guys do a little bit of the background on the Spokesman Book Club stuff?
Yeah, we play a lot at the Spokesman Book Clubs. We also play a lot on the street, just trying to make a couple bucks on the street. So if you ever walk downtown, you've probably heard me playing a couple times. I also play in Masterclass Big Band.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Mark Stevens is a great band. And I also play in, you know, all my school's bands and whatnot.
And that's at Lewis and Clark.
Lewis and Clark, yeah.
And your band director's name?
Dan Nord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. And, by the way, then he and his dad will be playing on October 23rd at the Bing when Renee Denfeld is there. So if you come in early and sidle up close to them so you can hear them over the laughter and the conversation, you could hear my guest, Rogan Tinsley, and his dad, Jesse Tinsley, playing a little music together. Got a little something to go out on right now?
Not really. Sax? Yeah, I would encourage the listeners to tune into the next time I'm on this, because there's going to be a piano and a clarinet, and it's going to be probably a whole lot more exciting. But we'll be playing a piece for alto saxophone, clarinet, and piano that is mostly improvisation, but loosely based on the idea of sirens, which, if you're familiar with the Odyssey and the Iliad, is kind of frightening.
Yeah.
So it's a frightening piece, but if you enjoy kind of horror movies and scary stuff, then you'll probably enjoy this piece.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that. That's we're intending that for the day after Thanksgiving. So while everybody else is at the mall spending money, that we're going to be doing a little bit of serious music and probably another session, too, that we'll try to get together with Rogan Tinsley. Thanks a lot for coming in. What
yeah,
a treat.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Okay. So were you going to play a little bit? No, that's it, right? That's it, huh?
I can play.
Yeah. Play us another prelude or something like that. Thank you. Another prelude from Rogan Tinsley. Thanks a lot, Rogan. What a lot of fun, all of this. So appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.